Chapter 51. Now all those Galileans who still remained in revolt from the Romans after the fall of Yodfat did, at the conquest of Tarikaa, surrender. And the Romans received the submission of all of the fortresses and cities, with an exception of Gish Halav and those who had occupied Mount Tabor. But also Gamala, a city situated on the other side of the lake opposite Tarikaa, was also in league with these rebels. Now Gamala formed a part of the territory allotted to Agrippa, like both Sugini and Seleucia, both of which were indeed in Golan. For Sugini was part of what is called Upper Golan, but Seleucia of the Lower. Now Seleucia was situated near Lake Samkuna. Indeed, this lake is 30 stadia in breadth, but 60 in length. Now its marshes extend as far as Daphna, which in other respects is a delightful place and has springs which feed what is called Little Jordan beneath the inner sanctum of the Golden Calf and sends it on its way to the greater river. Therefore indeed, at the very beginning of the revolt, Sugini and Seleucia had been induced by Agrippa to come to terms. But Gamala refused to surrender, relying even more confidently than Yodfat upon the natural difficulties of its position. For, from a lofty mountain, a rugged spur descends, rising in the middle to a hump. But the declivity from the hump's summit is the same length on both sides, so that the ridge resembles the figure of a camel. This is the origin of its name. Indeed, its sides and face are completely surrounded by inaccessible ravines. But at the tail end, where it hangs onto the mountain, it is somewhat easier to approach. But this quarter has also been rendered difficult to access, since its inhabitants have cut a trench across it. Now the houses were built against the steep mountain flank, terrifyingly huddled together, one on top of the other. This perpendicular site also gave the city the appearance of being suspended in the air, as if it would fall headlong upon itself. And indeed, it faces south. But its southern barrow, which rises to an immense height, formed the citadel. Now below this, an unwalled beetling cliff descended to a ravine of immense depth. Now there was a spring within the walls at the town's limits. This city, which nature had rendered so impregnable, I had enwalled, making it still stronger with underground passages and trenches. Now those who lived in it, indeed, had greater confidence in the nature of their place than the Yodfatians had been. But they were far inferior to them in the number of combatants, and such confidence did they have in their position that they would admit no more. For due to the strength of the city's defenses, it was packed with fugitives. And on this account, they were enabled to hold out for 7 months against those whom Agrippa had previously sent to besiege it. Now Vespasianus left Hamath, where he had previously encamped before Tiberias. Now Hamath may be interpreted as a warm bath, for there is a fountain of warm water within the city, possessing healing properties. He proceeded to Gamala, and indeed, he found that the city's situation prevented him from completely encompassing it. But he posted guards wherever it was practicable and occupied its overhanging mountain. Now, as the legions were, according to custom, in walling their camps on these heights, Vespasianus also indeed commenced earthworks to be raised at the tail end. The earthworks on the east of the ridge, opposite the point where the city's highest tower stood, were raised by the 15th Legion. And the earthworks opposite the city's center were undertaken by the 5th Legion, while the 10th Legion was employed in filling up the trenches and ravines. And even during this time, King Agrippa approached the walls and attempted to speak with the defenders about capitulation. But his right elbow was struck by a stone from one of the slingers. And indeed, at once, his companions surrounded him. But the Romans, both due to anger on the king's behalf, as well as to their own anxiety, were stimulated to press the siege. For they were convinced that men who could so savagely attack a fellow countryman, and one who was a counselor for nothing but what was for their own welfare, would shrink from no excess of cruelty toward foreigners and foes. Therefore, with such a multitude of hands accustomed to such work, the earthworks were rapidly completed, and the machines were brought into position. But Chares and Joseph, for they were the most powerful men in the city, drew up their heavy-armed soldiers. But the men were already frightened by the thought that, due to a deficiency of water and other necessaries, they would be unable to withstand the siege for long. But their leaders encouraged them and led them out upon the wall. And for a little while, they repelled those who were bringing up the machines. But the ammunition from the catapults and rock launchers drove them back into the city. Then, the Romans applied the rams at 3 different quarters. Indeed, they violently shook the wall, and it collapsed. But pouring through the breach with mighty trumpet blasts and clashing of weapons and battle cries, they engaged those who were inside the city. Now indeed, when the Romans first entered, these citizens held their ground, preventing their further advance, and they stubbornly repulsed them. But overpowered by numbers, and by them pouring in on all sides, the Romans fled to the upper parts of the city. and there, wheeling around to attack their pursuing foes. The citizens thrust them downhill, doing away with them, while they were impeded by the narrowness and difficulties of the terrain. Now the Romans were unable either to defend themselves from the citizens above them, or to force their way back through their own men who were pressing forward from behind. So, they took refuge on the roofs of their foes' houses, for they were low to the ground. But these houses, being crowded with soldiers and unable to bear their weight, suddenly caved in. But when one house collapsed, it brought down several others beneath it, and these again carried away those further down. This disaster was the ruin of multitudes of Romans. For although they saw the houses subsiding, they had nowhere else to turn, and they continued to leap onto the roofs. And indeed, many were buried by the ruins. But many who tried to escape from under them were pinned down by some part of their bodies. But even more were done away with, being suffocated by the dust. The Gamalites, supposing this to be the cooperation of God, and neglecting the damage which was laid upon themselves, pressed forward. They both forced their foes, who were stumbling in the deep alleys, up onto the roofs, and, with a continual fire from above, killed any of those who fell. And indeed, the debris supplied them with enormous rocks in abundance. But their foes' corpses supplied them with iron blades. For they wrested the short swords from the fallen, using them to dispatch any Romans who were struggling against death. Now when the houses were collapsing, many of the Romans flung themselves from the houses, dying from the fall. But those who fled found flight no easy matter. For being so unacquainted with the roads, and because the clouds of dust were so thick, they failed to recognize each other and fell prey to one another. Therefore, indeed, these fugitives, barely able to discover the ways out of the city, made their retreat.